Hi all, it's Paul Cunningham here. Before you listen to today's episode, we've had to come back and record an update. That's because the independent Maria Steen has been outside Leinster House. She's had something to say. Sandra, can you tell us all about it?
Yes, so there was a caucus, a nominating caucus organised today by Aonthu's Padraig Tobin. 10 Oireachtas members showed up today, and all of these 10 have agreed to sign nomination papers for Maria Steen. Now, of course, the problem is she's still 10 short to get the 20 to get her on the ballot paper. She says she's going to be working very hard over the next few days to talk to several other Oireachtas members who haven't nominated anyone. Asked whether this was a stunt, she gave a very terse, "We'll see." She was also asked whether the Irish electorate had previously rejected her positions. When you think of those big social referendums, the positions she advocated against change were rejected by the electorate. And she said that she was heartened by the rejection of the family and care referendums last year, and that people had been coming up to her and she wanted to speak to those people. So, interesting development. It's going to be very difficult for her to get to 20, though, but she's also going to try the council route at the moment.
So you mentioned 20 nominations were required. She says she's got the support of 10 TDs and senators. Was she able to elaborate who they were?
Yes, so we got the names of 8 of them. So it's the 3 Aonthu Oireachtas members, Padraig Tobin, Paul Lawless and Sarah Riley. Also, the Senator Joe Conway, Independent TD, Carol Nolan, Independent Senators Sharon Keoghan, Ronan Mullen, and the Independent TD Matty McGrath. Now, 2 names weren't revealed to us. I expect that they will leak out over the next while, though.
And just one last question. So where do you think they're going to go? She's going to hit the phones and basically try and convince TDs or senators who haven't given a position, who haven't given a nomination, would they support her, maybe even if they don't support her?
Yes, and I think that's going to be the argument that she's really going to use, because the obvious people who would agree with her conservative views have backed her today. These are the people we know in the Oireachtas who hold these views, people like Ronan Mullen, who's always advocated in that direction. So she's probably going to be forming that other argument that, well, you may not agree with me, but it's important that we have this debate and that my views are out there and that I get the chance to talk to the wider electorate.
OK, well, that's the update. Now let's listen to the podcast.
Hello again, this is RTE's Your Politics. I'm Áine Lawler, with me my colleagues Paul Cunningham, Micheál Lehane and Sandra Hurley. And then there were 3, Paul.
Yes, we've got 3 candidates standing in the presidential election. You couldn't say it's heating up, it's sort of still a little bit tepid, but maybe things are about to change, because take for example the Fine Gael candidate Heather Humphreys. This Saturday she's going to be launching her campaign sometime, someplace in Monaghan, we think possibly. So things are just beginning to sort of move into shape. The independent Catherine Connolly has been in the field for a number of months. And then we learnt that Jim Gavin, the former Dublin Football GA manager, is holding the standard for Fianna Fáil. Still in play. What is going to happen with Sinn Féin? Will they back Connolly? Oh, it seems, we were saying last week, and it still seems this week, that Piers Doherty is more likely to run than anyone else after Marion McDonald walked off the pitch. And then finally, we've got all the fun and games in the local authorities where it's possible, but it's only a small possibility, that someone else could come through that route as well.
And just on Sinn Féin and who their candidate might be, we'd Mary Lou on Morning Ireland with Mary during the weeks, Monday morning, bright and early, in her red dress, ruling herself out. The question is, what gets ruled in? You were telling us last week, Micheál, it would likely be Piers Doherty. And the fact that if Sinn Féin run their own candidate, and the fact that he's gone after Jim Gavin, now the chosen Fianna Fáil candidate, over his remarks on military objectives in the Israeli Defence Force campaign in Gaza. Does that add grist to that suspicion?
Yeah, I think very much so. I mean, clearly, Piers Doherty has been one of the strongest voices in Sinn Féin, regarded as a key part of the Sinn Féin plan to be part of the next government, to lead the next government. But one issue that he wouldn't have been the more vocal on in the party compared to others was Gaza. So the fact that he went in after Jim Gavin on that, which was clumsy, loose language, whatever way you look at it, even if Fianna Fáil say it has been taken out of context and is a distortion, it does show that he's engaged in this presidential debate. It shows that Sinn Féin are too. And I think when you look at the polling data, it does seem simple enough, I think, if there are 20% for Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin, and then if Catherine Connolly's on about 20% at the moment, is there a way for Sinn Féin to get enough for Catherine Connolly by not by just supporting her rather than putting a candidate in, that allows for a transfer pattern that is going to be in the order of 50% between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael if it goes the way of the general election patterns. And there's nothing to suggest it wouldn't. Surely there is no option really for Sinn Féin if they do want a non-government person in Áras an Uachtaráin, but to go into the race themselves. I think on numbers, that is the way it looks.
And Sandra, in terms of Jim Gavin, once that vote had been held in, by the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party, of course, Billy Kelleher getting 29 votes, which was more even than I think his own camp had been expecting going in. They were expecting 27, I think. But Jim Gavin has been having a bit of a getting to know you exercise with the media. How's that been going?
Yeah, I think a bit mixed so far. He's obviously has to get out there very quickly and really reach out to all the voters, who many of whom don't know who this man is. So he went on 6-1 on Tuesday. He got through most of the obvious questions that were going to get thrown at him, I think. But he looked a bit more uncomfortable, maybe in a social media video. And he's already hit his first controversy, Sinn Féin pouncing on those comments in another media interview that he did. But he has a lot. He has to prove himself very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. I just thought he looked a little uncomfortable in the social media video, trying to do that sort of PR schooled reach out to all the voters. He has so much to learn, I think, in a very quick time to get across to people.
And we were saying, weren't we, before this, it's one thing to do a one-on-one interview and be prepared. You know what your talking points are and so on. And it's between you and the interviewer. It's another when you're in the middle of a debate, and particularly if you did have somebody, an experienced debater like Pierre Starty on the stage, who would aim presumably to be a bit of a disruptor. It's another thing as well to be in front of a media scrum, cameras looking at you from all angles, questions coming thick and fast from all angles. And then as well, as we'll see at the ploughing next week, there's the charm factor which a candidate needs with the meet and greet.
Yes, you need to be likeable. People need to like you to want to see you as their president. And that is something that's going to be a big gear switch, I think, for him, because as the Dublin GAA manager, he had to be in control. He was cool and calm. That's what our sports colleague tell us. But maybe at times a little irritated with some of the media spotlight, didn't enjoy that side of it. He has so much to prove over the next while, and it's going to be really fascinating to see whether he can do that. He is a complete political novice, and you would have to think when it comes to the political debate, he is on the back foot already.
And many see the ploughing, of course, as kind of, you know, a key moment in any presidential campaign, given the timing and given the timing of the vote afterwards. You're putting your wellies on, Micheál. Is it your first time?
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
There's a lack of enthusiasm.
I would say that's a very RT perspective, that I am from a rural town, but I'm not a rural
person. From Coolock, baby, and I've been to the ploughing lots.
You see, I remember going to primary school, there was only ever one lad in our class that went, and that's because his father was involved in plantar ploughing, and the ploughing championship wasn't a thing in Kerry, rural southwest Kerry, when I was growing up. And the notion now that it is entirely reflective of all of rural Ireland, I don't know. I've never quite bought that.
And on the presidential election, I think you're right. You touched on a couple of things about the debate when it comes to Jim Gavin and, you know, the social media Sandra just mentioned. I thought it was interesting when it came to that media scrum on Tuesday. Micheál Martin, the Fianna Fáil leader, was right on his shoulder and was intervening a couple of times to try and steer him through what is clearly going to be a difficult moment. Micheál Martin's not going to be there every time. And they can, those things, they're like a rugby maul. They're moving, and you can suddenly become the target and you can get run over.
And I suppose that there's two things that define Jim Gavin. One is caution. He's this great cautious person. It gets him through everything. He has to throw caution to the wind. If you do that and it's not road tested, that surely comes with risks. And there also was that ingrained irritability that was something that got him through any difficulty around GA time. He didn't have too many difficulties given the amount that he was winning. So all those things have to be cast aside. And you have someone coming from a military background where it's all about control and assessing situations, who has to play in an entirely volatile situation. At the same time, when you have polling data on the first day before he's been really launched, that puts him in at 20%, it does mean he is resonating.
By the way, sorry, just in military parlance, it's a kinetic, not a violent, a kinetic scenario. That's the the lingo.
No. Okay.
Yeah, he's travelled. He knows things like this. Let's turn to Catherine Connolly, Sandra. And if she were to get the backing of Sinn Féin, how critical is that for her really to be in with a shout in this race? And she's doing reasonably well in the polls, the early polls, 20%, just, you know, like the other two that we know of so far.
It's very clear she really wants their backing. Not only did she go to Belfast, she made some comments last weekend that weren't widely picked up, where again, she had a stock phrase that she repeated a few times, a soundbite. She said it would be a glorious day if all the left parties could get behind one candidate, obviously Catherine Connolly. She really wants their backing. They would obviously have people on the ground around the country as well that would bolster her campaign. Mm-hmm. It's very much critical to her. But I think it's going to be fascinating that if Sinn Féin put their own person into this race, you're going to see a sort of divide. You've got Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on one side who are expected to transfer to each other. And then you're going to have Sinn Féin and Catherine Connolly on the other side who are going to transfer to each other. And there's going to be a sort of ideological split across that. We know that neutrality, the triple lock, is going to be a big part of this. You would have to think that Fianna Fáil and Micheál Martin selected Jim Gavin because he would expect him to be able to put forward a very considered argument as to why the triple lock should be changed. And we know the opposition is pushing completely on the other side.
And the polling consistently has shown a very deep commitment amongst the Irish population. Certainly is represented in opinion polls on the issue of neutrality. So that could play very well for her.
But I suppose the question is, the government would say that changing the triple lock does not mean we're diluting neutrality. The opposition think completely differently. I also think what was interesting, particularly in the polling last weekend in the Sunday Independent, was the various segments of the electorate. And what they found was the strengths and weaknesses so far of the candidates. Jim Gavin, big appeal in Dublin and to middle-aged men, but less so with women. Catherine Connolly strong with the youth vote. Question is always, will they turn up on the day and better with women? And Heather Humphreys better outside of Dublin, obviously Connacht Ulster. So they all have their weaknesses in terms of trying to get across to the entire electorate.
And Paul, Heather Humphreys in terms of Dublin, and also interesting to see, is she starting to try and put some distance between herself and Fine Gael? Because obviously as a candidate, a lot of focus on her track record. She's a long time in government. So there's a lot associated with her track record that can be brought up.
Well, that's it. She has to reach beyond the party because Fine Gael supporters are not enough for her to become the president. So she has to do that. She's had something of a soft launch. She's been on a number of regional stations. She was on Radio Kerry a couple of days ago. She's on Ocean FM today. But the big thing will be on Saturday. That will be a Fine Gael event. But she will be tilting away from the party. She does have to reach out beyond. And she will say, well, the presidency, you know, as a sort of entity, isn't political per se. So expect that. That's part of the game. Mm-hmm. And then the question will be, and we'll be watching it very closely, to what extent and how many occasions does she have the Fine Gael party leader Simon Harris standing beside her? Or is it something she decides she has to jettison to reach a wider audience?
It was interesting. She wasn't at the party thinking that Fine Gael had a Mullingar, but yet there were a few ministers like Pascal Donoghue and others who were out on the town canvassing for her, which is kind of a curious enough thing, and making a number of points. One is that, in the words of Jennifer Carl McNeill, if you want to know Ireland, really know it, it's the credit union movement. The people who say yes when others say no. So that's going to be one of the selling points. There's obviously the stuff on the border and Heather Humphrey's background. And the fact then that she ran three government departments at the one time when Helen McAtee was on maternity leave and that Heather Humphreys was in charge of rural social protection and justice, that she has this executive ability to run things. And as well as that, there's the tours that she spent up and down the country giving money out as part of rural affairs. And they seem to be the four big selling points that Fine Gael are going for.
Which doesn't necessarily link into a Dublin audience, and that's another element. Mm. How is she going to be able to make that a relevant message to Dublin? And I'm sure they're going to have a specific plan for that.
And what about the others? Because at the moment, we were saying, and then there were three. It's a three-horse race. So what about the chances, leaving Sinn Féin aside, maybe they'll make it four. But what about the chances of any of the others? We're speaking on Thursday afternoon, evening. Aintu today have been holding a meet and greet the candidates here in Leinster
Conclave.
House. I leave it to you.
Well, they have, but I think it's a bit of messing in all of that because Aintu haven't delivered the numbers for anyone coming in, and it seems to be about building momentum. But momentum to what? If it's not to get the 20 signatures in here, is it momentum with the local authorities? Which, although Fianna Fáil haven't been direct in blocking people, I think they've sent out the signal, as have Sinn Féin, despite everything Mary Lou McDonald talking about the party and everyone involved working for Enterprise Sinn Féin. So I think those three bigger parties have the thing blocked off, even if there are a few renegades. So, I mean, there's no obvious way through. Some whispers from some of the bigger parties about Maria Steen would would it be beneficial to put her in the race? And of course, an intellectual argument to allow for that has been set down by Fintan O'Toole in the Irish Times now. So if something is going to happen at any level, do you think it might be Maria Steen?
And she's an accomplished media performer. When the candidates were, or the putative candidates were making their pitch to Kerry County Council, they Niall O'Connor, I think, wasn't it? Put, yes. Very helpfully put up a lot of those clips online. And so you were able to see, you know, the pitch she made to councillors and the question and answer. And she'd certainly be, you know, experienced when it comes to a debate as well, wouldn't she, Sandra?
Yeah, from what I'm hearing about the councils is there's only two people possibly who might get through at this point. And as Micheál said, there's no guarantee they will get through. That is Maria Steen and Gareth Sheridan. There's a lot of councils in play next Monday and Tuesday. I have a list of some of them here. Dublin City Council is going to vote on Monday. Leash on Monday.
Conor McGregor will be.
He will be at Dublin City Council. Yes, they're going to let everybody make their pitch. Kerry will vote on Monday and Tipperary is on Tuesday. Fingal tomorrow, they're going to hear from just two people because only two people got the four required sponsors, and that's Maria Steen and Gareth Sheridan. Some disquiet in people supporting Maria Steen. They feel that Sharon Keoghan, senator, has been campaigning, trying to get some of the independents she works with around the councils to back Gareth Sheridan. So there seems to be a divide there. Others saying that
they might have made more of an impact, all of these independents, if there'd been fewer to choose from.
Exactly. But they are quite different. They are offering quite different things. Somebody else pointed out to me, though, that when Mayo voted last week and Maria Steen went in front of them, it was 15-4, the vote against her. So she didn't get through. So it is looking very tight. Some people today saying that this caucus that Pádraig Tobin has organised, that it is just a stunt to get some publicity for Maria Steen to try and build some momentum around mm-hmm. her. There may only be 10 votes if they do coalesce around somebody. Independent Ireland has been very clear that they're not getting on board unless somebody gets to 16, and they'll come in as the final four to
is
get that person up to 20.
Is there a bit of tension looking at the social media interactions?
No question, and there has been for some time. They don't want to get on board, I think, with an initiative that was kicked off by Pádraig Tobin, and I suppose they wouldn't want to hand it to him in that way. So it's going to be interesting to watch the councils over the next 2 weeks. We will see Conor McGregor, as you said, making his pitch to Dublin City Council. That potentially is going to be a bit of a circus, but everyone, we're told, will get their 5 minutes, and then the councillors will decide, A, if they will support anybody, and then secondly, who that might be. He does need a proposer and seconder to push it to a vote, but he has probably three councillors who would be willing to do that. Some well-known mm-hmm. figures, Phil Sutcliffe, Malachy Steenson and Gavin Pepper. So a huge interest in that. He hasn't made the cut in Fingal. He did apply there, but they decided on a rule that you needed four sponsors in order to be allowed to address the council.
One way or another, it's going to be the shortest ballot paper anyone's filled out in an Irish election in a long time, won't it? Almost back to the good old days, isn't it?
I mean, it is still possible that you could only have three names. So we've been talking about the local authority routes, but if it was the case that Sinn Féin decided that they wanted to keep their money and not run a candidate and just give vocal support to Catherine Connolly, you could have just three names on it. That's where we could be going. I agree with Micheál. My gut feeling tells me that Piers Doherty will join. That'll probably be four.
All right. Let's move on to the party think-ins, which are taking place, started this week and running on into next week ahead of the Dáil's return. Fine Gael, Micheál, you were there?
Yeah, very strange atmosphere because of Simon Harris talking about security threats. But then, what does that mean? Because he put out that line at the weekend that he'd be guided by his family, which seems to be indicating, is there a possible thought process underway about leaving politics? And he didn't quite fully dismiss that when he was asked repeatedly about it on Monday. He's also talking for the need for a bigger response when it comes to threats. But what that actually means, he hasn't fleshed out either. For all those reasons that created a certain strange atmosphere. Yes, concern among colleagues about the threats and about his safety. But equally, it is political life. If there's any sense that maybe there might be a vacancy of the top job about to emerge, that will inevitably lead to whispers and looking at people and people talking about how the Fine Gael leader was behaving and it being described as erratic, understandably.
On the other hand, Sandra, it was good to see, wasn't there, right across the political spectrum, so many people condemning those threats. You know, I mean, politicians are used to abuse and name calling, but you know, threats to the person, threats to your family, threats to your children, that's just above and beyond. And you know, it's not as if we're not seeing right around the world where that kind of approach to politics can lead you.
Yes, and that is the fear that it would lead to something really terrible happening here. We heard from Roderick O'Gorman, the Green Party leader, this morning talking about the amount of security he has at his home. I know of another junior minister who's had to massively increase the security around his house as well. It is really difficult. The Taoiseach Micheál Martin made some comments about this today that were also interesting. He said he's worried about the type of nationalism that is taking hold in some disadvantaged communities, that people are being taken advantage of. And then that people who are newer to Ireland, that their children are having difficulties, that they are facing racism, they're scared to go into towns late at night. He did concede that it's late to be doing anything about this, but he said it has to be combated, that people have to be more strategic. But we all know there's no simple answer. That's the problem.
I know it was interesting. We had to take a trip to Belfast at the weekend and, you know, driving up through the port. So, you know, there's, you see around certain parts of the city, the Irish tricolour mm-hmm. being flown. And then you go up to Belfast and you're driving parts by certain parts of the city. And there's the Union Jack and the Ulster flag being shown. And, you know, everybody, you know, you naturally feel well disposed towards your flag. But when you see it being flown in areas and the message appears to be exclusion, that's a really uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah, it's menacing. And I've seen it around Dublin as well. There's something very sinister about it. You've had grassroots movements of individuals locally trying to take them down. But every politician who's spoken about it, the Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, was asked about this and admitted you have to handle it sensitively. You can't order people just to take down the flag. So again, no simple answers. A really difficult issue to get to the bottom of.
And I suppose that issue of division is something that can be of use to some of the fringe groups. And I was in Belfast recently and I saw sort of in a loyalist area there was the Israeli flag. And then if you went over to the nationalist area, it was the Palestinian flag. And it is that process of division, isolation, and then you're able to use that and convert it into some political mechanism. But as Sandra said, it's tough. But given the types of threats that are being made, action has to be taken. I mean, it just simply cannot be allowed to stand that you have senior politicians whose children are under threat.
Yeah, and whose families have to put up with that as the price. And all of this chases people out of politics and so on and so forth. Fianna Fáil, and the fact that Micheál Martin's authority, having backed Jim Gavin so committedly, 29 votes for Billy Kelleher. What does that say about Micheál Martin's feud? And actually, it's funny, isn't it, in terms of both Micheál Martin now and Simon Harris, a lot riding in terms of their leadership and their own futures on their candidates' success or failure.
Yeah, and how much will those candidates... Well, I suppose in Jim Gavin's case, it's clear enough that he needs the Fianna Fáil leader in the backing there. I mean, is there a question for Heather Humphreys and Simon Harris that how close would her campaign want to be to Simon Harris? I mean, that is a legitimate question. Presidential elections usually don't lead to great political ructions, but they have in the past with Austin Currie, I suppose, and Alan Duke, so it's not impossible either. So they will be mindful of that. Micheál Martin's authority has been challenged for the first time. There's been a sustained campaign that held its nerve, helped by secret ballot, that is true. But they did stand up against him. They did say that the one strategy, the one approach from the leader, which is the way the party has been run and run successfully for a long time now, that no longer washes and there has to be greater consultation. And does it really put the signal out that when you get to that point in December 2027, that Micheál Martin could be reaching the end then?
I think there was a connection being drawn between that outcome of the votes that Billy Kelleher got and then when the National Executive Fianna Fáil met to consider what communication they were going to have with their councillors and the concept of the presidential. They did not follow Fine Gael and say there's a whip and we'll go after you if you don't vote our way. It was, we're asking the best of you and would you not row in behind Jim?
Did Billy Kelleher do Fianna Fáil a favour? It's a long time since the parliamentary party and the various views of parliamentary party members and Fianna Fáil have been discussed and analysed in the media to such an extent.
I think absolutely. I think an election is always a good thing. He went in, he did very well. One colleague I was talking to said Billy was delighted with the vote. The only thing that could have gone badly was if he'd actually won it. But to a certain degree, he was pushing for something, knowing that's what the outcome was ultimately going to be. But as far as the debate goes, I think dynamics like that are good.
Will Pascal Donoghue and Jack Chambers be happy that all the focus on the presidential is kind of keeping eyes off the budget at this stage, although we're getting heavy hints, aren't we, about a targeted second tier of child benefit.
Yeah, and that there should be enough there maybe for a budget day announcement, if not implementation straight away, that it could be some time off this. And children seem to be the big part of the budget. But I mean, whatever way you look at it, given that energy prices are still going up for many people, it's going to be a hard sell, this transition. And Jack Chambers just this afternoon talking about the medium-term plans and that how all future changes to budget is going to have to be based on credible stuff. You know, so does the election's over. Things have changed now. At the same time, if the government move in the direction with the tax package of 1.5 billion, which apparently isn't going to be adjusted, if they do something for VAT in there, and if they do something for property developers, which hasn't been ruled out, that is going to be a fairly difficult sell for the government.
It does look like, though, on the VAT, they are giving us hints as well that they will carve it up between food and the hotels. Yeah. They'll try and take the hotels out of it. So it won't eat up maybe close to the billion that was first quoted a few months ago. So that would be a more popular move electorally. Obviously, not popular with hotels, but it would be an easier sell, I think. But the opposition are going to hammer them on this the whole time. And also the proximity of the budget to the vote means that the opposition will hang this budget on the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael candidates in the presidential race.
Let's wrap up by talking about a book launch you were at the other evening, Micheál.
It's Leo Varadkar's book launch, where he admitted to misremembering and remembering things entirely wrong at certain points, only for his former speechwriter, Patrick Gagan, and his chief of staff, Brian Murphy, to correct him. So he says everything in the book is accurate. Interesting speech from Leo Varadkar, but opening with a gripe, of course, as usual, where he spoke about Brian Dobson, who launched. He said Brian Dobson was a journalist who always knew his facts, had his research done, which isn't always the case. So setting out his stall early, but saying that he believes this is the first draft of history and pointing to the fact that decisions that you take as Taoiseach are complicated. You barely come down either side on them, and it isn't the right or wrong option, which is obviously the way things can be presented in the media a lot.
And I'm going to chip in on this one, because you said you couldn't go on Morning Ireland with a 60-40 kind of balance on a question. But isn't that part of what's wrong with politics? As my kids keep saying to me, stop being so binary. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That parties turn politics into binary choices, when in fact, you know, there are upsides and downsides, and, you know, sometimes it's about the balance on one side or the other. It certainly make for better interviews, that's what I think.
Because it sounds a bit more complicated. We all know that life is complicated, it isn't black and white. But sometimes the projection a leader or minister might want to give is, you know, I will take you to the mountain. I have the vision, I have the knowledge, and this is part and parcel of that path. To say you're not quite so sure, hesitancy, those qualities don't necessarily go with what you want or may want to project.
I suppose he did, at times in Taoiseach, whether we came to the lockdown restrictions, that he did try and have a debate or raise questions, but it never worked out well for Leo Varadkar when he tried to do that.
Yeah, he always got jumped on. Of course, the famous one during lockdown was the time he disagreed with Neffert, wasn't
yes.
it, on the letter? Yes.
Yeah, and that ultimately he had to roll back from that.
And rightly so.
I suppose it, ultimately too, he always argued that he was too cautious, wasn't he? And that they had listened to the cautious view far too much.
Economists.
That was
in
really
particular.
Interesting when he stepped down. He said that they got stuff wrong when, in the early stages of the recovery, they should have invested more, they should have built more, but they were being far too cautious. And as you said, they listened to the economists.
That's interesting in light of the argument that seems to be going on in the background. We're not hearing too much about it between DEEPER, the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, and all of these ministers who've got great big plans about how they can spend all the corporation monies under the National Development Plan. And there really does seem to be a big tension there the whole time. And you look at things like the tenant in situ scheme and the way government handling of that offering has evolved, to put it mildly, and, you know, DEEPER a big influence there.
Yeah, because the announcements are made that a certain amount of money is there, but the councils around the country in the tenant in situ scheme are saying that they've been told you're over budget and the money isn't there and the scheme is not working in many places around the country, and it has been very popular.
Yeah, and so I now think that because there was the moral hazard question as well, so it's now going to be that 50 million, isn't it? I think it's going to be focused on people in emergency accommodation to avoid that problem. As we get closer to Budget Day, I expect we'll be hearing lots more about housing and taxes and cost of living and all of that. So we'll doubtless be talking about
hotels.
All of that. Yes.
Jack Chambers has a new word today. Well, it's not a new word, but it's a word they're going to use. It's the days of additionality are coming to an end, and it's about reform again. and making the most of existing resources.
Which every
minister... We've been here before.
I was going to say every finance minister in the run to budget.
Additionality. So we can add that one to fiscal envelope. Is that right? Do you remember the fiscal envelope? All right.
That's gone out of fashion now. We don't hear the fiscal space anymore.
No. Space. Yes. You're right.
Financial envelope. Fiscal space.
You see, there you go. If only we were more educated. But thank you for correcting me. And we'll be back with you next week. Talk then. Bye.